So Mirtz Hashem will start the Mishnah and a brand new sugya on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, about five lines down from the top. And let me begin with an introduction . There's a concept called Breira, and it appears and applies in many, many different areas in Halacha. We have it very often in Hafrashas Trumas and Maisras. We have it also in Gittin. And here we have it in Erev. And basically, Breira means that the validity of his action, the legal or halachic validity of his action, depends upon something in the future. And when the future comes to pass and becomes the present, then and only then will we know retroactively whether or not his action was valid, whether it was binding. And the Rashba already points out here as an introduction to our sugya that Breira only applies when we require l'mafreya, retroactive. If we don't require a birur l'mafreya, then that has nothing to do with the sugya of Breira. And basically the machlokas about Breira can be reduced to the following question: can tomorrow's situation determine today's action or the validity or the application of today's action? Can tomorrow clarify retroactively that what I did today was valid? So what I'm doing today, I don't know whether it's valid or not. We're going to have a case, for example, where he sets up an Eruv on one side of the city and another Erev on the other side of the city, and he has to determine where he's Konish Visa. You cannot have two Erevin pulling in two different directions that are both valid at the same time. Now, let's say he sets up the Erev on both sides and he says, you know, maybe this Erev on the eastern side will be my Makom Shvisa, will be my valid Erev, or maybe it'll be the one on my western side. And that will be determined by which way the winds blow tomorrow. You know, if the winds blow from the east, then let my Erev on the east be valid. If they blow from the west, let my Erev from the west be valid. And again, we're going to get into all the details of how he sets up this double Erev with his condition of Breira in just a minute as we go through the details of the Mishnah. But fundamentally, we have two shitas. One shita says, Ein Breira. You know, either the action is well-defined and it is valid in its time, in its moment, immediately when you set it up. So you gave a get. The get is either valid or invalid. Don't tell me, well, tomorrow, if she walks through the northern door, then the get is valid. And same in Trumas and Maisras. Don't tell me that my Hafrasha should be valid if, you know, something happens tomorrow, and then we'll know now whether today, l'mafreya, retroactively, my action, that's called Ein Breira. Our mission, on the other hand, reflects the shita of Yesh Breira, which means that it is valid, and we'll find out the nature and the status of the action today, tomorrow. Now, the big, gigantic question is, how do we reconcile Ein Breira, which again is not our Mishnah, but other Mishnayos, with Tnai, right? There's a parish of Tnai that's derived from B'nei Gad, B'nei Ruven, and Mishpat HaTnai means that I can set up a Tnai. I can say that this action will be valid if and when such and such a thing happens. If that doesn't happen and the Kiyum HaTnai never comes to fruition, then my action is totally invalid. But there is such an entity called Tnai. No one denies Tnai. And the Torah recognizes that my action today is undetermined, and the validity or lack thereof of my action will depend upon Kiruva Tanai or Bitla Tanai. So it's only tomorrow that we'll find out and determine retroactively whether or not my action was valid. So what's the difference between Brera and Tanai? Again, that's a fundamental question that has to be answered even if I hold Yesh Brera, because Yesh Brera implies that it's not operating me in Tanai, but it's operating me through the methodology of Brera. But it's an especially acute question if you hold Ein Brera, because how do you reconcile Ein Brera with Tanai, with Yesh Tanai? So by way of introduction, I'm going to introduce three different approaches to this issue as to how to separate between Tanai and Brera. Two out of the three are pretty clear. The third, which is the Yamshel Shlomo, the Marshal, 5 centuries ago, is a little bit more challenging. So we'll try the best we can. So the first approach is formulated by Rashi in Masechet Gittin on Daf Chaf Hey Amid Beis, 25b. And Rashi says that the difference between Tanai and Brera is that Tanai is biyado lekayim. Tanai means I have the ability to fulfill and implement the Tanai. So it's totally dependent upon my action. And everybody agrees that such a that method is viable. And you can make it Tanai. So even if I hold Ein Brera, Yesh Tanai. If I create a Tanai that's Ein Biyacholto Lekaimo, there's no way he can fulfill that Tanai. He doesn't control the winds, so he cannot determine where the winds will blow from the east or from the west. That's called Brera. And that's, according to one Man D'Yomer, invalid. Ein Brera. You can't make your action depend upon something that's outside of the purview of your ability to implement that action. So, for example, we're going to have the case of two Erevin, and he's going to say, well, if the guy comes to attack from this side, meaning from the eastern side, I want to be able to run towards the west. So he sets up the Erev. If the guy attacks from the west, he wants his Erev to be on the east. In such a case, it's Ein Biyado Lekaimo, that's Brera. If, for example, he wants to go Chutz L'Tchum to greet his Rebbe who's coming, he doesn't know if his Rebbe is coming from that city or that city. So he says, let my Erev be valid from that city because the Chacham is coming from there. In event, he comes from there. He comes from there. That's called Brera. That's already Ein Biyado Lekaimo. Had it been biyado lekaimo, then he could make a tanai and he could say, well, if I decide to do X and come from here, then let my Erev be from that side. And if I decide I want to do it from here, let my Erev be from this side. That's a tanai. And everybody agrees that tanai is valid. That's the approach of Rashi in Masechet Gittin. And from one perspective, Rashi is the simplest of all three approaches. The Ramban has a different approach, and to some extent it's almost antithetical to Rashi, almost. Now the Ramban appears in Masechet Gittin, but truth be told, we don't understand the Ramban. The one who opens up the Ramban about 8 centuries after the Ramban, or more, was Rav Shimon Shkop. And he wrote a major work called Sharei Yoshar, which is divided up into 7 parts. And in the last of his 7 parts, which is called Shar Zion, he tries to make some sense out of this Ramban in Gittin. Have you all heard of Rav Shimon Shkop? My father, Zichron Levracha, was 1 year too young. his good buddy Rabbi Silva, who was the Rav in Harrisburg, was a Talmud by Rav Shimon Shkup at Yeshiva University. It wasn't called the Yeshiva University at that time. It was Yeshiva College and Rav Yitzchak Chanan Yeshiva. But my father was too young. I think he was either 15 or 16. I don't remember. And they wouldn't let him go into Rav Shimon Shkup's shiur. But his good buddy, Rav Silva, I don't know if you heard of Rav Silva, may rest in peace, my good friend Aaron Silva's father, he was young enough to go to Rav Shimon Shkup. Rav Shimon Shkup taught at YU for 8 months, according to what I know, until finally the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael forced him to come back to Europe. Because they didn't like the fact that Yeshiva University had a college, you know, it was Yeshiva College. Anyway, and my father used to say that after Rav Shimon left, they brought in Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and those who had been by Rav Shimon were at a major disadvantage, because Rav Shimon was the most charismatic personality. He was a tremendous machanech, and Rav Shimon knew how to evoke answers from the students, and they got so addicted to his approach that when Rav Moshe came, it was very difficult for them to make the transition. My father didn't have that problem. Anyway, so Rav Shimon says the following. I'll read to you a two-line piece from an entire shar of the Shari Yosher. He says, Kol makom shemahus achalos mivureres lanu v'rak masne she'im lo yikuyim tno'o lo yochul hadover klal. He says, when does tnai apply, which is again not a debated issue, everybody agrees that tnai is valid, that's when we know the chalos, it's very clear to us, in other words, what exactly is going to happen. In other words, the get will be chal, or the truma will be, not frustrated, truma be chal, the erev be chal. In all those cases, when the chalos itself is clear, but he makes a tnai, and he says that there's something external to the chalos that has to happen in order for him to want this chalos, and through his das to validate the chalos. That's called a tnai. And basically what he says is that this chalos is either a yay or a nay. It either will be or it won't be, and it all depend upon some action, some tnai that will take place. That's not at all relevant to the machlokes about yesh brera or ein brera. Everybody agrees that you could make a tnai. And all this is because, again, to summarize, it's the Chalos bifnei atzma mevurar heitev. There's absolute clarity about the halachic status that will result. Ela hatnai hu dover chitzoni. The tnai is something that's external to the chalos. Omnom, now we get to Brera. B'makom sha'atnai gorem l'safek bi'etzem birur hachalos. If he makes a condition which clarifies the nature of the chalos itself, it's not something that is external, but he's saying, I am creating a chalos, and you and I don't know the nature, the scope, the parameters of that chalos. The chalos itself is mutal b'safek. What will be the impact? He says that's called brera. So, for example, he has an eruv going this way. He has an eruv going that way. And he sets up two eruvin. We don't know what is the nature of the chalos. He's basically contradicting himself by setting up two Erevim, because an Erev is a statement that I am Kona Shvisa here, in this particular location. And now he's setting up two Erevim. Well, each Erev basically undermines the second Erev. V'ein adam yachol arev shnei tzdadim ki echad. You know, he can't have his 2,000 Amma to the east and at the same time 2,000 Amma to the west. Is therefore chalos bi atzma eino mevureres. We don't know the chalos. Is leman diomar ein brera eino yochel lasos kein. He cannot create a kind of a t'nai which will determine the chalos itself. What is the chalos? Is it a chalos that he's kona shvisa here? Is he chalos that he's kona shvisa there? You want to say, for example, there will be a get, but only if you pay me 200 zuz. Okay, so the 200 zuz is external to the chalos. The chalos itself is crystal clear. Whether the chalos will be chal and it will take effect or not, that depends upon the kiyum tnai, but the tnai is always external to the chalos. But if he makes a tnai in which the very chalos is indetermined, where is he going to be kona shvisa? Is it here or is it there? That's called brera. All right, it's a lot more complicated than Rashi, but at least I can begin to understand it. And as we go through the sugya brera and all its applications, we can try Reb Shimon Shkup out and get more used to it, if you know what I mean. But then we get to the third approach, the Yam Shel Shlomo, which is the work of the Marshal, right? His name is Reb Shlomo Luria. He lived 5 centuries ago. He was a contemporary of the Ramah. He was one of the pillars of Ashkenazic Psak, and he wrote a book on Bava Kama called the Yam Shel Shlomo. There are actually many different volumes on different Masechtas, but probably, I think, no doubt, the most famous of them all is the Yam Shel Shlomo on Bava Kama. A massive piece of work. I once actually owned a copy, but whatever. I was a little bit desperate at that point, so I sold it. In any event, so the Yam Shel Shlomo wants to differentiate between Tnai and Brera. And he says the following. Again, reading just a few lines from the 5th chapter of the Yam Shel Shlomo. Tnai, Osid Lizbarer Bevadai. The Eino Tolui Bebrera. A Tnai will definitely be clarified at some point. The suffix is whether it will happen or it won't happen, whether the Tnai will be fulfilled or won't be fulfilled. But one way or the other, it'll either be A or B. It'll either be fulfilled, you know, she'll cough up to 200 zuz, or she won't cough up to 200 zuz. And that's Tanai. What's Brera? Brera is like our case in Erevin. Ein ze vadai shatnai yisbarer lebasof. Nobody can even guarantee you that we will clarify whether the Tanai was fulfilled or not. Sherei masne she'im yavar chacham mitzad ma'arovi. Yeah, Eruv Litzad Mara. Fim Yovo Hachochom Mitzad Mairov, Yeah, Mairov Litzad Mara. Yi Tochen, Shelabasof, Lo Yovo Hachochom Klal, Lo Mitzad Mairov, Lo Mitzad Dorom. He says, in such a case, a Tnai will only be valid if I hold Yesh Brera. But Ein Brera means that the Tanai is invalid. Now, what is complicated here about the Yam Shel Shlomo? Why do I say that this is the most complicated approach? The Yam Shel Shlomo assumes, as in contradistinction to the other two approaches, that Brera is Tanai. It's just another form of a Tanai. It's a Tanai which might be possible, so to speak. According to the Man Diomer, Ein Brera, this is a Tanai that is batel and cannot operate midin tanai. And, you know, there are many different requirements in setting up a tanai. And that's called mishpatei atnoim. You know, I always say that's why we go to a lawyer, so to speak. You know, again, Judaism, halacha doesn't really have that profession of a lawyer. But if there was a lawyer in Jewish law, it would be for Tanai. You know, I'd go to a lawyer to write me up a document that would guarantee me that this sale that I'm entering into and this document is only valid if, you know, so he has to write the if, and he's got to have Tehen Kodem Lelav, and it's got to be Tanai Kofel and all the different fine print of a Tanai. Comes along the Abshal Shlomo, and he adds a new condition to Mishpatei HaTnoim. When is a Tanai going to be valid? Okay, only a Tanai can only be valid. So I didn't take care of this before. Maybe I could still take care of it now. Okay, anyway. A Tanai could only be valid if it's definite that at some point or other you'll have either A or B. Either the Kiyama Tanai or the non-fulfillment of the Tanai, we'll call it the Bitola Tanai. But if you set up a Tanai on something that if maybe it will happen, it won't happen, we don't even know if it's going to be A or B. The whole enterprise of either A or B is in question. You know, you're telling me the Chacham is going to come from the west or from the east. Well, maybe it won't come at all. That invalidates the Tanai. And it's very difficult because, you know, there are many sugyas in Shas, especially Masechta Kiddushin, about Mishpatei HaTnoim, and we never found that a psul in Hilchas Tnoim is that you have a case where it might not be neither A nor B. That's not on the list of Mishpatei HaTnoim. But it comes out according to the Amshel Shlomo that if you hold Ein Breira, we now have another additional requirement that has to be added to the list of a valid Tanai, another regulation that governs Tanai. So that's just I would even call it a surface level introduction to the sugya of Breira, with three basic approaches. Rashi says, is it something that the Tanai is something that you could fulfill? It's Biyotcha L'Kayim. If it's not, it's Breira. And Rav Shimon Shkop interprets the Ramban as saying that if it's a Tanai that's Chitzoni, that's extraneous to the Chalos itself, that's called Tanai, if it defines the nature of the Chalos and the Birur of the Chalos, that's a Sugya of Breira. And then we have the Amshel Shlomo who says that a Tanai means it's either going to happen or it won't happen. And you have two choices, A or B. If there's a third possibility that's neither A nor B, that comes under the sugya of Breira. Okay then, so let's learn the Mishnah inside. Masna Adam Ale Ruva. Now our Mishnah is going to validate this Tanai, reflecting the Shita called Yesh Breira. The Omer, and he says the following. So he has two Erevin. He puts one Erev 2,000 Amah on the east, another 2,000 Amah on the west, and he declares, Im Ba'u Nochrin, if the Goyim will come. Now, there's another problem here in this Mishnah, but it's very futuristic. And that's a sugya at the end of Erevin on Daf Pei Beis, which is called Ein Ma'arvin El Ledvar Mitzvah. I mean, that's going to throw a whole monkey wrench on a lot of different things that we've learned. I mean, we never knew that Erev depends and is limited to a Dvar Mitzvah. So it could be that if it's a matter of finding refuge from Goyim that are coming to attack the city, then that's considered a Dvar Mitzvah. And therefore, this would be a valid Eruv. Okay, fine. Okay. So let's go over it. Imbo Nochrim, if the Nochrim are going to come, Min HaMizrach, and I have to run towards the Mairov, towards the west, then Eruvi Lamar, if I want to be Konish Visa on the western side. Now, that means that he will have 4,000 Amma because he's allowed 2,000 Amma on the western side beyond the bounds of the city, even without the Eruv. The Eruv gives him another additional 2,000 Amma. So all told, on the west, he's going to have 4,000 Amma. Now, this is Brera. Why? Because we're not sure if the Goyim are going to come to attack from the Marav. And he goes and he says, Mina Marav Eruvi Lemizrach. If on the other hand, so wait, in the first case, they're coming from the east and he's running to the west. In the second case, they're coming from the west and he's going to run to the east. So he wants 4,000 Amma beyond the city limits to the east. Is that's fine. And his Erev is valid. Now he continues this Ma'ariv. And what does he say? He says, Im ba'u lekan ulekan. What if Nebuch the Goyim, it's so interesting, the sociology here, that, you know, the Mishnah could have come up with so many different cases. We'll see other cases of Brera in Erev, but the first case is where the Goyim coming to attack. Sounds like my father's description of his shtetl, where he was born. You know, where are they coming to attack from? He says, but im bo lekan ulekan is lamakom she'ertza elech, meaning I'll have to make a last-minute decision and figure out, strategically, which side is the best to run to. So therefore, let me decide which Erev is valid by actually running and fleeing in that direction. Achlit b'Shabbat li'an lifnot. On Shabbat, I will make that decision in which direction I will flee. Now, the next part of the Mishnah, I need to explain. He continues, and he says, Lo bo, lo lekan, v'lo lekan hareni k'bnei ha'ir. And what he's doing is, and he's saying that if the goyim at the end of the day don't come, then I invalidate my Eruv. Now, if I invalidate my Eruv, then my status reverts back to the rest of the B'nai Ha'ir, meaning they don't have an Eruv. Nobody in the city made an Eruv, at least not in this context, right? B'nai Ha'ir. Now, if that be the case, then he is stuck within a 2,000 Amma radius around the outskirts of the city, no matter which direction it is. What prompted him to make that statement? I mean, why not just say, leave well enough alone? You know, he created two Erevin, and we don't know which one is valid, to the east or to the west, and it depends on where they come from, etc., etc. If they don't come at all, so that's it. Why did he have to, what compelled him to add Hare Ani Kibnei Ha'ir? And I think, again, I'm going out on a limb over here, because honestly, I looked and I couldn't find an answer to this question. But I think the answer is as follows. Did we ever discuss something called Gamal Chamar? Did we ever? I don't know if that rings any bell. I'm not sure. Maybe that's in the second parak. There's such a thing, a problem of being pulled in two different directions. Like a tug of war. In the Gemara's language, it's called Chamar Gamal. The Gemara uses a mashal. It's a case of somebody who's leading both a donkey and a camel. And the donkey goes in front and the camel goes in the back. And as he's leading these two animals, each animal is pulling him in a different direction. You know, the chamar is in the front pulling. So it turns out like this. If I, let's say, I'm in a city and I set up my Eruv Litzad Marav. I'm just giving an example. So what happens now is that I'm not allowed on Shabbos to go to the east. Why? Because I was now Konish Visa, 2,000 Amma to the east. I mean, to the west. I meant to say to the west. And now that I'm Konish Visa, at that point, I only have a radius of 2,000 amah from that point. In other words, I undermine my shvisa from my bias, and I reestablish my shvisa 2,000 amah outside of the city limits, which is okay, which means that I can come back to the city. But if I go in the opposite direction of my Eruv, then I'm violating the Tchum that is always determined by Makom Shvisa. So in a certain sense, he would really be fine setting up his Makom Shvisa at home, which would mean that he's allowed to walk 2,000 amah beyond the outskirts of the city in any direction, rather than have a commitment to an Eruv, which restricts his ability to walk, based on the new Makom Shvisa. So he wants to go out of his way to clarify that if there's no need for this Eruv, or for either of the two Eruvin, because the Goyim didn't come at the end, then he's a free agent to go Chutz L'Tchum, to go to the Tchum of Chutz L'Ir, for 2,000 amah, which is the Tchum Shabbos, in any direction. Again, I would insist that even if he didn't add this explicit statement, he would still, in any event, fall back to his original Knias Shvisa Bibeso, because the two Erevin are mutually exclusive. And if there's no birur, if you hold the Yeshbrei, right, there's no mavaria to clarify which of the two Erevin is the valid Eruv, then because these two Erevin contradict each other, they cannot mutually exist, coexist, therefore they blow each other out of the water. But he wants to stipulate that clearly, that his Makom Shvisa is Bebesa. All right, let's go on. Now we have another case of Brera, and the Gemara is going to try to figure out why the Mishnah needed two cases of Brera. He makes the following statement with regard to his two Erevin. Im ba chacham min ha-mizrach, if the chacham comes to on his way from the east, and I want to greet him, but it's chutz l'tchum, is a ruvi lemizrach. Let my eruv be on the mizrach, so I can leave the city, not only 2,000 amah, but another additional 2,000 amah, 4,000 amah, in order to greet the chacham. And clearly, in this case, it's the tzarf dvar mitzvah, whether it's mitzvah lahakmil pnei rabo, or whether it's and kovid rabo, or maybe he's going to learn Torah from his rebbe. And the mefarshim try to dramatize this. They quote Yoshua. It says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain, he greeted Yoshua. Yoshua greeted him, I should say, right? He was, because Yoshua pitched his tent at the foot of the mountain. That's why Yoshua was the last to find out about the Chet HaEgel, because he wasn't there at the time of the Chet HaEgel. He was at the foot of the mountain. Moshe was aware of the Chet HaEgel because Lech Rei Kishi Chazamcha. So Rashi says, why was Yoshua at, why did he take his tent, for 40 days and he pitched it at the end of the mountain? Because he wanted to get that opportunity to spend those extra few minutes with Moshe Rabbeinu on his way from the foot of the mountain back to the Machna. You see that a real disciple wants to really exploit every possible moment to spend with his Rebbe. So here in this case, he wants to learn Torah from his Rebbe. His Rebbe's coming in Chutz L'Tchum, from the east, so he sets up an Erev on the east, and that gives him an extra 2,000 amah on the east. However, min ha-mayrov, if my Rebbe comes from, or a Chacham comes from the west, is a Ruvi l'marov. I should be able to greet him by walking 4,000 amah towards the west. And ba lekan ulekan, let's say there are two Chachamim, and, one Chacham comes from the west, Rav Eliyahu comes from the west, and Rav Ovadya Yosef comes from the east. So I have to decide which of the two Chachamim I'm going to go greet. is then Lamakum Sheretz Eilech, I'll decide at the end of the day which way I want to go, and my decision will be the Brera that'll determine which Erev I was Konish Visa in. Alolakan, Alolakan, Areni, Kibnei, Iri. And all this is up to Rabbi Yehuda. This is the Shita of the Tanakama. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. And he says that not in all cases will we allow him to go either direction to greet the Chacham. And he says the following. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, if a Chacham comes from both sides, meaning the two Chachamim, Im haya echad meim rabo holich etzel rabo. Im haya shneim rabosav lemakom sheyirtze yelech. Now, it's not clear whether Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with the Tanakhama or he is restricting and reinterpreting the Tanakhama, but one thing is clear. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the following premise, and that is that under all circumstances, if two chachamim come from two sides, the ma'arev has the discretion. He can decide which one of his eruvin and which rebbe, which chacham he's going to go greet. That's not absolutely so. Because the halach of kvod rabo generates a chiyu for him to go and greet his rebbe. So let's say, for example, you could have a great chacham, but he's not your Rebbe. You can have a lesser Chacham, but he is your Rebbe. He taught you, let's say, Rov Chachmascha. You know, most of what you know from that Rebbe. So the halacha is that you have to give preferential treatment in Hilchas Kavod to your Rebbe, over and above the other Chacham, who might be greater than your Rebbe. And since Eruv is determined because of Dvar Mitzvah, he would be mevatel a mitzvah if he went to the west to greet the Chacham rather than walk towards the east to greet his Rebbe. And if that be the case, then by being mevatel a mitzvah, it's no longer an Erev L'Shem mitzvah. Okay, now, if you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maschil Rebbe, so Rashi says that our Mishnah is talking about a case where he puts down two Erevin. He already knew on Erev Shabbos that one of these two Chachamim is going to be his Rebbe. Again, he didn't know which side his Rebbe is going to come from, but he knew that one of these two great scholars would be his Rebbe. Comes along the Rashash, and he says, I don't understand this Rashi. Because Rabbi Yehuda says that he should go to the tzad of his Rebbe. But he made a t'nai, he made a condition, that if the two Chachamim come from both sides, even though, according to Rashi, he knew very well that one of those two Chachamim are his Rebbe, is his Rebbe, then yelech l'makom sheyachlit. Right? He said, what was the language of the Tanai? He said, L'makom she'eretz ha'elech. So his Gili Das was that even though one of the two Chacham is his Rebbe, he still wants to allow himself the decision to go and greet the Chacham instead of greeting his Rebbe. And the direction which he'll take, he will decide on Shabbos itself. So why does Rabbi Yehuda insist that he, Dafka, has to go to the tzad of his Rebbe when he himself knew that his Rebbe is coming from one tzad, he didn't know which tzad, and he made a statement that, b'mokom she'achlit, b'mokom she'erze eilech. So that's the kasha of the Rashash. I thought that the answer to the Rashash is that this Rebbe is his Rebbe Muvah. The Rashash is not willing to grant that this Rebbe is his Rebbe Muvok. So now, in the Rashash's frame of reference, the halachas of kavod here are really equal. Why? Because one person is his Rebbe, albeit not his Rebbe Muvok, but he's a lesser scholar. The other Chacham is a greater scholar, but it's not his Rebbe. He didn't study any Torah from him. That gives the Ma'arev the right to say, L'mokom she'elech, erze elech. And he has now the right to choose. So what's Rabbi Yehuda saying? Rabbi Yehuda saying, well, I'm going to do a psychological analysis and I'm going to come to the conclusion that he really wanted the Eruv in the place where his Rebbe is coming, in that direction, because that's his Rebbe, has an ongoing relationship with his Rebbe, and he has a desire to continue learning with his Rebbe, and so forth and so on. Says the Rosh Hashanah, forget about all that. All that is bufkis. It's meaningless, because since he knew that one of the two of these two Chachamim was his Rebbe, and afal pichay, nevertheless he said, b'mokom she'erza eilech, then he is allowing himself to be koneshvis in the place of the Chacham. And assuming that the Rebbe is not his Rebbe Muvok, then he has all the rights to do that. And that's also called the Tzorech Mitzvah. So what's Rabbi Yehuda saying? It seems to me that the answer to the Rosh Hashanah's question lies in a very little short Tosfos, Divrei Maskil v'Hayu Shneim Rabosav. Do you take a look at that Tosfos, the second Tosfos on the page? He says, Itzrich lashme'inon dafilu echad rabo muvhak. In other words, Tosfos is saying that the chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda is that im hayu shneim rabosav lemakon sheyirtze yelech, even though one of the two is his Rebbe muvhak. In other words, Tosfos is implying that he has the option of going to greet his Rebbe, who's not his Rebbe Muvok. And that's gufa, according to Tosfos, the chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda. So in other words, the word rabosav, according to Tosfos, again, it's a little bit dochak, but Tosfos' back is against the wall. He can't figure out why Rabbi Yehuda had to add this proviso that if both are Rabosav and they're equal, then we go back to his Tanai, as the Tanakam already mentioned, L'mokom she'erza elech. I mean, basically, Rabbi Yehuda is just repeating what we already know. If Rabbi Yehuda was Mechadish that he has an obligation to go in one direction or the other, because this Rebbe is greater in cover than that Rebbe, okay, fine. We have to understand that. The Rosh Hashanah didn't understand that. But in the Sefer, it's Shneim Rabosav. So, obviously, it's his discretionary choice which direction which Rebbe he wants to greet. So Tosfos' name, Shneim Rabosav, means he's studied Torah at the feet of both of these Rebbeim, but one of them is his Rebbe Muvok. And is an what I call a Gevaldige Chiddush in Rabbi Yehuda and Mishnah, that despite the fact that one of the two is his Rebbe Muvok, he can still choose to go greet the Rebbe that's Eino Rebbe Muvok. So I have here a note from a sefer called Lashon HaZov. I'm not familiar with it. He says the following. He says, "Ein lomar sh'Rabbi Yehuda bo lashmi'enu." We should not interpret that Rabbi Yehuda's chiddush here is that even if yesh brera, right? We're holding now yesh brera, correct? Just one second. That even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that yesh brera. Yeah, that seems obvious. No, he says ein lomar. Let's not say that Rabbi Yehuda balash mi enu she yesh brera. Shebeloze yeshmakom litos shesover ein brer. Oh, okay. Now he's going to say, we could have salkadait chamina according to review the ein brera. Lachain matir rak b'makom she'echemem rabo. Oh. The Lashon Azov has a whole new take on rabo. We said that rabo means that we should translate that and reduce that into terms of Hilchas Kvod Rabo. And where's the purview of the mitzvah? No, forget all that. Says the Lashon Azov, Rabo is an answer to the problem of Ein Brera. Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Brera except in the case of Rabo. Again, all this is in a negative sign. Remember, he's going to reject all this, but let's understand what he's rejecting. He says, Rabbi Yehuda matir rak b'mokom she'echemem rabo. And what is the significance of echemem rabo? Hadover kvar mevurar. It's already clear from the get-go that he's going out towards what? Towards rabo. And therefore, in the next case, so now we have an answer to Tosus's kasha, an alternative answer to Tosus's kasha. Tosus was bothered. Why did Rabbi Yehuda have to say Mahayushneim Rabosov? Is the Makom Sheir Tzayelech, if they're both equal, why did Rabbi Yehuda have to repeat what we already know, that if they're both equal, then his Tnai, which is Brera, is valid? The answer is because Rabbi Yehuda wants to clarify that Yesh Brera. You would have thought, if not for this addition, that Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Brera. And the only case where the Erev would be valid is where it's Rabo. And since it's Rabo, therefore it's a Dover Mevurar. It's already inherently clear that he's going, in the two Chachavim that are coming, he's going towards his Rebbe. But if they're equal, then the entire enterprise of the Erev would be blown out of the water because he can't set up two Erevim. And Rabbi Yehuda is holding Ein Brera. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, as an alternative answer to Tosa's question, in Vayushneim Rabosov, is Rabbi Yehuda wants to tell you that the Erev is still valid, namely Yesh Brera. Umuchach shegam l'das Rabbi Yehuda yesh brera, el shebemokom she'echemem rabo borolanu. Right? In that case, where one of them is Rebbe, we know clearly which of the two Erevin are going to be valid. Whereas in the case of two chachamim, even if they're equal, we're going to rely on brera. And the reason why Rabbi Yehuda had to add that, which was already explicit in the Reisha and the Tanakam, is because we don't know that Rabbi Yehuda holds Yesh Brera. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Brera, and only in the case of Rabo, where it's clear which direction he's going to want his Erev, only then Rabbi Yehuda will validate the Erev. Says the Lashon Azov, why did Tosus reject this? It seems like a very logical way of interpreting the Mishnah. If Tosus is looking for the extra chidush in the sefer of Mahayushneim Rabosov is Lamakum Shir Tzayelik. Mivneisha Kvar Mitchilas Dvarov Muchach Sheyesh Brera L'das Rav Yehud. I don't need this addendum in order to clarify that Rav Yehud certainly holds Yesh Brera. Why is that? Shekvar Mitchilas Dvarov Biofen She'echemem Rabo, in the case of one of these two Chacham is his Rebbe, Muchach sheyesh brera ledaita. It can only operate midin brera. Why? Sharia Mishnah medaberes gam biofen shebe'erev Shabbos bein hashmoshos adayin lo yada liyeze tzad yagia rabo lebasov. Okay, let's say he knew that one of the two chachamim would be his Rebbe, and therefore he knew that he wants the Erev to be in that direction from which his Rebbe is going to come, but he doesn't know which direction his Rebbe is going to come from. V'lo ayudu alo liyeza tzad yagia rabo lebasov. V'yaf al pichein, Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda said in the ratio of Rabbi Yehuda's statement that mutal alechas elav, he can go out and greet his Rebbe chutz l'tchum and validate the Erev on that side. Al karcha humishum tam di yesh brera. It must be that Rabbi Yehuda holds yesh brera. So again, you cannot tell me that if I hold ein brera, if Rabbi Yehuda holds ein brera, then Rabbo is going to solve the problem of ein brera because we know for sure that he's going to want to go in the direction of Rabbo. That's totally incorrect, says the Lashon HaZohar, because I'll grant you that for sure he wants to go in the direction of Rabbo. That doesn't solve brera because he doesn't know which direction the Rav is coming from. And therefore, the enterprise of the two Erevin is dependent upon brera. And if Rabbi Yehuda says that he can go out there and greet his Rebbe, chutz l'tchum, on that side, it must be that what underlies Rabbi Yehuda's shita is yesh brera. So I don't need the imhayu shneim rabosav to tell me again that the brera is valid and the erev is valid. And therefore Tosfos is forced to say that imhayu shneim rabosav means that one is his Rebbe muvak, and nevertheless, he still has the choice to go in this direction or in that direction. Now, I just wanted to take one moment, if we can learn this b'chavrusa, to figure out if the Lashon HaZov makes sense according to all three approaches to Brera that we mentioned earlier. Let me just see if we can analyze this together. If you hold like Rashi, and you don't have control over the circumstances and decide, you know, which direction he's going to come from, that's Brera. So then everything fits into place. If you go like the Shari Yoshar, that it all depends upon whether or not the scope of the Eruv and which Erev will be Chal, that's Brera, then again, it works out. What confuses my mind is the Yamshel Shlomo. The Yamshel Shlomo says what? That it has to ultimately be clarified. And maybe... So again, the Lashon HaZohar, what's he assuming? He's assuming that the Chacham and his Rebbe are both coming, but he doesn't know which side they're coming from. Now, you're going to have to, according to the Yamshel Shlomo, if you want to accept the approach here of the Lashon HaZohar to explain this Tosfos, you're going to have to add another piece of the pie, which again, it's not, I don't think it's a problem, just pointing it out, namely that it could be his Rebbe or neither of these two Chachamim. It's all rumor, it's all hearsay. You know, we heard a rumor that two great rabbis are coming to town, right? One rabbi is his Rebbe Muvak, or at least his Rebbe, and the other is a Chacham. But it could be at the end of the day that neither of them will actually show up. Okay, so that's the Mishnah. And what we got up to now is the Gemara. So at this point, I think what we'll do is we'll start the Gemara. Ki asa Rabbi Yitzchak tani ipcha kula masnisen. So Rabbi Yitzchak came and he brought a brisa, and it says the exact opposite of our Mishnah. Words, our Mishnah says that a person who's running away from the Nochrim and he makes a condition that his Erev should be konish visa on the tzad that's keneged bi asam, or a chacham, he wants to go and greet the chacham, and he wants his Erev to be konish shvis on the tzad where his chacham is coming. The Braisa has the exact opposite, that a person wants to go towards the Nochrim, and he makes a tanai, the Erev should be konish shvis on the tzad that the Nochrim are coming. And the chacham, he wants to run away from the chacham, and he makes a tanai that he wants his Erev to be chal on the tzad that's the opposite from mokom biyoso. So that's called Tani Ipcha. Is Kasha Nochrim Anochrim Kasha Chacham Achacham? So the Gemara answers Nochrim Anochrim Lo Kasha. Ha be Faragavna, ve ha be Mori Demosa.
our Mishnah is talking about goyim who are collecting taxes, and therefore he's running away from them, and he wants his tanai to be in the opposite side. The Bryce is talking about a case of the controllers of the city. You know, these are the officers of the municipal government, and he wants to come in front of them and complain that some of the Tzorchei Bnei Ha'ir are not being serviced well, or perhaps he wants to pacify them and pay them off for whatever it is that they should fulfill the needs, you know, their water, electricity, whatever needs they need. So the Tanai is that he'll be Kona Shvisa in the place where the Nochrim comes. And Chochem HaChochem Lo Kasha, Ha'abit Mosef Pirkei, Ha'abit Mikrei Shema. Our Mishnah is talking about a case of a Chacham who comes to be Doresh publicly. And his das is to go and hear the drosha. So he makes the Tanai that it should be Shvikona Shvis on the tzad where the Chacham is coming from. But the Bryce is talking about a case of a Chacham who's coming to teach the young children to read Kriyat Shema and to daven. And we're talking about a case where on the other side there's a Chacham who's coming to be Doresh Barabin. Therefore, he makes it Tanai that if the Chacham who's coming to teach the children is coming on the east, he wants to be Kona Erev on the Meirev, because that's where the Chacham is coming to be Doresh. Okay, then, so here's where we're going to stop on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, and we're in the middle of the Amud.